Hello. You're listening to Career Conversations, the latest series as part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is food product developer Laura Bradshaw, who has over 15 years' experience working with all the top retailers in the UK to develop great-tasting new products. A lot of her job requires her to stay on top of food trends, which can mean she's eating out at fancy new restaurants on the boss's dime. Not a bad perk. But equally, you might find her on the factory floor at 2 a.m. I'll be back at the end with some key info about why a career in product development could be so rewarding and what you might expect to earn. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast. How would you describe what you do to, say, a friend or a neighbour?
A lot of my friends actually ask me all the time, your job sounds amazing, what actually do you do? Essentially, I do everything that is involved with getting a product on the shelf.
If we break it down, NPD, for example, what does that stand for and what does that bit mean?
So that's new product development. So that essentially is developing a new product or range of products from the very beginning, from blue sky innovation. So eating at different restaurants sort of focused around a theme or a culinary trend or something that we've seen in the marketplace. Then taking that kind of inspiration into a product brief, working it up with or without a retailer. So it might be an internally focused project or something that we're working directly with a retailer on. And then it's kind of everything from product costing, nutritional testing, shelf life understanding, making sure the packaging is fit for purpose, all the way through to product trialing within the factory.
So right now you're working for a company called Pilgrims, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So what kind of products do they deal with?
So they are the largest pig producer and manufacturer in the UK. So they deal with the major retailers within the UK, producing anything from fresh pork, so pork chops, etc., to bacon, through to snacking lines such as Scotch eggs.
Oh, Scotch eggs. Those Scotch eggs have been in the news a lot lately, haven't they?
Yes, they have. Very popular.
But you've had a long career leading up to working here at Pilgrims, where you've worked with lots of different kinds of products. How does the journey start? Obviously, you're hired by a company, you work there full time. But do they come to you and say, we'd like to launch a new product, here's what we're thinking? Or do you go to them and say, I'm spotting a trend for something?
So I work for the company. We all have a number of customers who we are working with, liaising with, and making sure that those customers are growing their categories within their sector, within the category. It's a two-way thing. So from a proactive point of view, we will be going to a retailer, so Marks and Spencer's, for example, and saying, we've seen this trend, you know, we think we need to bring it to life. And we will then go away, work on those products and bring them to life as a proposition to the customer. Contrary to that, or differently to that, they may issue a product brief. So they may be doing almost exactly the same exercise as us. So they may select suppliers based on their capabilities and competencies within their portfolio of products.
And earlier on, you mentioned that eating out is part of your job. That's quite a nice perk, isn't it?
Yes. So that's at the very beginning of stages, really. And I think the key thing to sort of an innovation-based role is that you're keeping up with what's going on in the marketplace. Lots of trends develop in the restaurant scene. You know, they're seen first in restaurants and then they gain momentum and gain popularity. So it's really key that we are aware of what is going on in the restaurant scene. So yeah, that ultimately involves eating out at restaurants on occasions. So,
oh, it's not bad, Laura. I bet you get lots of friends saying, can I join you tonight?
Yes, we do. Yeah, everyone says, oh, I'm so jealous of your role. You know, it's got its challenges. It's not glamorous in terms of how some people see it. You can be on a factory line at 2 a.m. in the morning, if needs be. You know, it's not a bed of roses in that respect, but it's certainly varied and certainly offers you something different every day.
I love the idea that you're at the cutting edge of knowing what's coming up in food, what's, you know, spotting trends. How do you actually do that? Obviously, you're saying you're eating out at restaurants. Do you use trend forecasting companies or anything like that?
Yeah, so we work closely with and have a subscription to the Food People. Don't know if you're aware of them, but they are a big company that is literally what they do. They're spotting trends. They're talking about how they're manifesting in the marketplace across the world. But I think really, from my personal point of view, social media, so Instagram, is just a, really hands-on way to keep abreast of what's going on. And then really just keeping your eyes open all the time, even down to just things on billboards, adverts that aren't necessarily relating to food can sometimes spark an idea. Great British Menu's on currently, those kind of things. So just keeping really at the forefront of what's going on. And I think the fact that I enjoy it, it makes it a really easy job.
Yeah, it sounds fantastically creative in many ways. You've talked about being on the production line at 2 a.m, but actually I imagine that going about your daily life, inspiration can strike from anywhere.
It can. And sometimes you might just be driving along thinking about almost what you're going to have for dinner that evening. If I have those moments of inspiration, I literally just send myself a message kind of thing and make sure that I follow it up.
Oh, I bet there's a few people out there that love access to your recorded voice notes then, Laura. Can you tell us, what do you think will be big in food later this year or even going forward into the future?
So the sustainability piece is a massive one. I think it's a real problem in the industry. It's a real problem worldwide, really. And I think the plant-based trend is just going to become more and more. I think there's some real learnings to be taken from that, because actually from a customer point of view, they're thinking, oh, I'm reducing my meat intake and meat is bad for the environment in terms of this carbon dioxide production, etc. They're not necessarily thinking about, oh, I'm eating avocado that's come from Peru and the air miles associated with that. I think it's a very relevant trend, but I don't think there's necessarily the full thinking behind it as to how that long-term will bring to the industry.
But you're working in meat industry now, so is it an interesting time to be in meat, given that so many people are turning veggie and flexitarian? How does that work when you're producing sausages and meaty-based products?
Yes, it's a massive thing. So within our portfolio, we do have a number of plant-based companies. So it's certainly something that the business, from a wider point of view, is looking at and making sure that they are in the game within that market. I think the key thing is that we as a business as well are quite aware that although it's a big trend, people are still going to continue to eat meat for years to come.
I'm half Turkish and I feel like Turkish food and Middle Eastern and Lebanese flavours have really had a bit of a moment at the end of last year. I'm wondering if there are any global food trends you can spot that are coming up. What's going to be the hot new trend?
Yeah, I think Filipino is on the cusp of becoming a proper trend. You know, there's some restaurants in London and Manchester, but it's not really gained that momentum where it becomes a widespread trend. And I think the first place you'll see it is the likes of Marks and Spencer's, because they catch on to a trend and they're the innovators within the retail market space.
Yeah, M&S feel really daring. I feel like they're the first ones who brought us bao buns, for example.
Yes, exactly. I think going back to that trends watching, they are great at that. And I think they really, they find a trend, they hook it. And then when they bring it to life, they do a great job of it.
Yeah, they really go for it. April Preston, Head of Food Development at M&S, if you're listening, I want you to come on the show. now, Laura, before you came on air, I gave you a good old stalk on LinkedIn, and I can see from your CV that you've worked mostly in chilled and ambient foods, which to me sounds like the name of a 90s album from Ibiza. What is chilled and ambient food?
It's also known as FMCG, so fast moving consumer goods. So anything that you see within the chilled fridges within a retailer. And then the ambient ranges, so the tomato ketchups, packets of rice, etc. That's kind of classed as the ambient. And then I guess additionally to that, you have the frozen.
So ambient is like larder foods, larder staples?
Yes. So things that have a long shelf life that can sit in your cupboard and not go off, essentially. So kind of comes back to best before dates versus used by dates. So non-perishable foods.
How strictly do you stick to those use by dates in your own cupboards at home?
Not very strictly at all, to be honest. I think I've probably got some tomato ketchup or something in there that's been, I think it says, used within 6 weeks once opened. I think mine's probably there for 6 months, I would say.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, Laura. Let's talk about how you got here, because there's lots of students listening. What did you study and where?
So I studied a BSc Honours in Food and Nutrition at Sheffield Hallam University way back in 2003. That was a 4-year course. And as part of the third year, it was a sandwich placement course. And I did a third year placement in industry.
Hang on a minute. Do you mean a sandwich placement course as in it was a year between your studies? Or do you mean you actually worked with sandwiches?
It's called a sandwich course because you have a year in industry sandwiched essentially into the middle of your studies. So yeah, it wasn't the latter, unfortunately.
I mean, you never know with food people. You could have had a year with sandwiches. And so was this something you always wanted to do? Because I have never even heard of this job when I started my catering career.
It's an interesting one because at school, I had a passion for geography and I had a passion for home economics, as it was at the time. So I loved food and I really enjoyed my geography course. I think a lot of it comes back down to the teacher that you're working with. And I loved both of my home ec teacher and my geography teacher. I went with the food route based on the fact that it really was my passion at that point in time. I think, you know, I enjoyed geography, but I think I was really passionate about food. And I kind of went with the view of the food industry, albeit it was quite unknown to me at that time, it's a massive industry. And I thought until we are surviving as a human race on a pill, for example, you know, to kind of just sustain us, I thought there's got to be, you know, a number of jobs in that industry. And it's the longevity that I was looking for, really, coupled with the passion that I had as well.
Yeah, people always have to eat. I hope we don't get to a stage where we're just living on a pill.
Exactly. I was just thinking, you know, if you think about automation and robotics, etc., I just thought there's, you know, people love food. There's always going to be the food industry as an industry for jobs, etc.
So your degree, BSc, that's a Bachelor of Science?
Yes.
What was the first route you took? Where did you go in your first role?
Yeah, so my third year placement was quite key and pivotal, really, because my other cohorts within my year, they were going to the likes of Cadbury, Nestle, you know, Marks and Spencer's as a retailer. And I got a job at one of the largest chicken producers in the UK. But I thought this is completely, I don't know the company. I didn't, you know, it didn't sound very glamorous. I thought, oh, brilliant. I'm going to, you know, everyone else is going off to do great products, products that are known within the marketplace, brands, except for big, huge brands. And I'm going off to a glamorous chicken factory. But it was the best grounding I had in my career. I got totally thrown in at the deep end. I was doing product trials over in the factories we had at the time in France, in Northern Ireland. I was traveling there as a student. I was working with the teams. I was based over in Grantham in Lincolnshire. And I just felt I had a really good grounding and a really realistic representation of what the role was. I just had a great experience, really. And that's not to say the other people in the big branded companies didn't, but I just felt like it, you know, I was pleasantly surprised.
Let's talk about whether there was a big break moment for you in your career or a moment that cemented things for you.
So in my 10 years at Bakkavor, within the first year, I got handed a project. It was for Sainsbury's actually at the time. And it was a range of authentic Mexican ready meals. And the project wasn't in the best shape in terms of us getting to the point of ready for launch. And I felt completely thrown in at the deep end. And they just said, right, Laura, we need you to just get this back on track. This project's kind of fallen behind the timelines and we just need to get it back on track. And I remember thinking, this is a massive opportunity. And also it was a massive mountain to climb in terms of where the project was. The complexity of the products was very different to what the site had done before. And it felt like an absolute mountain to climb. But I think with, you know, a good team around me and that passion and wanting it to succeed and almost this inbuilt thing within MPD people, MPD professionals, you know, the product is everything. You just cannot fail because you're, you know, letting the customers down, but you're also letting your customer. So in this case, Sainsbury's. So it just wasn't an option, but it was kind of what made me. I just got on with it, you know, worked through things methodically. And, you know, there was a bit of crazy days where it felt like it wasn't going to come to fruition, but it did, you know, eventually with some good organisation and the good team support around me. We, you know, we brought it to life and we got it over the line and we launched it. So it's what I live for, really. It's those moments where you can get something delivered and over the line. It's the euphoric feeling, really.
Once again, I'm hearing a tale of how you threw yourself in at the deep end and that was the best way to learn. Can you recommend any great online resources, books, or even people that students should follow who work in your industry that might help guide them a bit?
I think April Preston, like you said, as a director at M&S, you know, massively foodie person, constantly sharing pictures of where she's eaten, what she's eaten, etc. And then the likes of Breege Donahue, so now director of food at Tesco, recently moved from Co-op, you know, comes back to that passion. It's just, it like oozes out of people.
From my LinkedIn stalking, I can see that you've been a really valuable mentor to certain people in the industry. Are there any industry schemes for graduates or apprentices that people can get a taste of what you do?
Yes. So I don't know if you're aware of Flourish in Food. That's probably the key one that springs to mind. So co-founded by Cameron Rigg and Joe Elston, head of food at Greencore, which is another big meals provider. And it's a scheme that puts mentors with mentees and links people up together so that people like myself can mentor a mentee with any particular reasons to what they're trying to achieve. So is it finding a job? Is it getting a promotion? And just, you know, working through with like-minded people based on, you know, some experience we've had in the marketplace.
That sounds fantastic. It's really nice to know there's help out there for people. I think you can feel a bit lost when you're a student. You don't know where to turn at first. When I interview successful people such as yourself, I'm always impressed with how hard they work and how busy their day is. Are you one of these people that gets up super early? What's a typical day like for you?
So I have a 2.5-year-old. So yes, I get up super early, but it's not necessarily by choice. The normal day really consists of once I've got my little boy to nursery or grandparents, etc., making sure that there's a plan for the day. So, you know, obviously that will be focused around some meetings and some ad hoc things. So linking in with the production sites, making sure that projects are on track and up to date. I could be working on product costing, so making sure that we're on track for an upcoming project in terms of a group of product costings. I might be going off to one of the sites to review a set of products before submission into a customer. I could be going out to do some blue sky innovation, so just, you know, literally gathering some ideas. It's really, really varied.
In my role here at Food Matters Live, I'm a chef, but I've really enjoyed learning about food technology and where the future of food is going. Do you ever feel this pressure to be the first to market with a new trend?
I think it's a massive thing within the industry, yes. It's sometimes really hard to get that first market opportunity because so much has been done and so much is out there. But as food manufacturers now, we're having to think really differently as to how we bring ideas to the retailer, or from a branded point of view, how we bring them to life and how we bring them to consumers' fingertips, essentially. I think direct to consumer is a massive area of opportunity. So COVID has really excelled that. So in terms of being able to order a food box from your favourite restaurant, that's now an opportunity. I think how we can then do that as a food manufacturer to get our products to consumers in a different way other than them going into a supermarket, I think is a really key opportunity moving forward.
Do you still feel excited about your industry?
I do, yes. It's so fast. It changes so much. I think you have to keep up to date with what's going on because you can very quickly feel out of date. I had, you know, a year off with maternity leave, and I think you come back into the industry and so much has moved on. You know, there's new legislation coming in. You've really got to kind of, you know, read up and keep yourself up to date with what's going on to make sure that you're that kind of one step ahead. But it's still, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to say it's definitely the job for me. I can't imagine myself doing anything else, really.
It's me again. That was Laura Bradshaw, whose main advice for wannabe product developers is to be vigorously interested in what's going on in food and try to second guess what might be coming. Laura says Filipino food is going to be big. You heard it here first. Now for the all-important information I promised you at the start. When you start as a junior product development chef or product developer outside of a kitchen, you might be on about £24,000 or more for a large company's graduate scheme, where they often give you a starter bonus. This salary goes up to £50,000 a year at a more senior level. And of course, if you become the food product developer for a big food group, you're talking around £80,000 to £100,000 a year. Routes in include a degree in food science or nutrition, but research skills and a proven knack for trend forecasting could also help you land that first entry-level job. Thank you again to Laura for speaking with me, and thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.